Jared and the GM on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. We are live from K-Bob's Grill and Ale. K-Bob's out here where we've got a pair of lower-level tickets that you can win for game number 5. K-Bob's has 3 to 4 new beers each day and rotates through as many as 450 a year. They've got 2-for-1 all-day drafts on Saturday, so come on out tomorrow. And, of course, K-Bob's has a menu designed with healthy options. K-Bob's out here, Hillsborough Village, across the street from Vanderbilt, 1602 21st Avenue South. And again, you've got less than an hour to come on out and register to win those lower-level tickets for game number 5 tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Okay, Floyd, I complained all day yesterday about the propensity that some Peter LaViolette teams have to go out there and get their butts kicked in certain playoff games. Just like 5-1 last night, we went over them all, whether it was San Jose, whether it was Colorado last year, whether it was the Cup Final. They've had games where they've gone out and gotten their butt kicked, and that's not good. But here is the good news. After the butt kickings, the Predators usually play pretty well. They got their butt kicked in the Anaheim series 3 years ago. They won game 6 and 7 and went on to the second round. They got their butt kicked in the second round in game 5 against San Jose. They beat San Jose in game 6. They got their butt kicked by Colorado last year in game 3. They beat them in game 4. So what is it about these Peter LaViolette teams that, A, have the propensity to go out in the playoffs and get their butts kicked, because I don't see anybody else getting their butts kicked in the playoffs, and two, that has those same teams turn it around in the next game and usually end up winning the game? What do we make of that? Because even though the getting your butt kicked is not a good thing, well, that's already happened. So if you can build off of this and follow history's path and win tomorrow, we'll take it.
Yeah, and I'm sure they'll come in. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt in my mind but that the Preds will come in and play like gangbusters. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think they have been embarrassed. They know that. They have not performed the way they wanted. There's a lot of criticism, a lot of stuff going on. Given that, they want to get it right.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're going to go out there and they'll play like a house of fire. I think they'll go ahead and win this and everything will end up all right. But if they don't, if it goes the other way, then I think you've got major, major concerns.
So I think that's the coach in you, that, like, you don't want to get too far ahead of yourself. Because you're saying, what if and this. But if it doesn't happen, then, because that would be the big fear. But you seem pretty comfortable that they're going to win tomorrow. I felt that. Remember after game 1, we sat up here and we said, they're going to win game 2. And they, went out and they won game 2. I'm not sure I feel the same confidence level as you've got about tomorrow. I mean, I'm worried about game 5. I'm worried the Dallas Stars are on to the Predators. I'm worried that the Predators just have too many guys not playing well enough right now, and I'm worried that Pekka's not going to be able to steal the game tomorrow, which, if you put him in the position that he has to do it, that's too much to ask of him. So I'm not totally confident that they're going to go out there and win tomorrow. I'm very nervous about tomorrow's game, but I do take at least a little comfort in the fact that after they've gotten their buns kicked under Peter LaViolette, they usually go out there and they play well. But you seem to be very confident.
Yeah, I mean, I'm completely confident. I think, what the embarrassment of the last game is going to be their accelerator, if you will. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's going to propel them. They're going to go out and show the hockey world it. And I think the same kind of emotion that I think kind of spurred Dallas in the last game is going to spur the Preds in this game.
Like the desperation emotion?
Maybe. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's, revenge. Maybe it's, I'm not sure. But I think there'll be some emotion there, and I think that will get them over the hump.
I just want to know where the goals are going to come from. If you're going to go out there and beat somebody, you're going to obviously have to score. Where are the goals going to come from?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you heard Chris just a minute ago say, maybe somebody in the front line, maybe Arvey gets one, and then, somebody down the line. I mean, we said from the beginning, and I kind of had a gut feeling that, three goals a game is going to win you this series.
Probably.
Three goals a game. So you've got to find a way to get three goals. And Pekka's going to some way, somehow hold them to two. And so that'll be good enough to win.
Okay, so who's going to score your three goals?
Somebody on the first line, and then...
let's go with Forsberg because he seems like the surest bet.
Whoever, okay. And then somebody on the newly created second line.
Sissons,
let's say.
Because you know Granlund's not going to score again.
And then just...
And Yarncroke doesn't score.
The third one will be just a name your player.
Boy,
makes no difference.
That feels like the Corey Davis theory of hope.
That's exactly what it is.
Which is... I mean, I hope Corey Davis can be a number one wide receiver. Do I trust that Corey Davis is a number one wide receiver? No. But I hope that Corey Davis is a number one wide receiver, because if Corey Davis is a number one wide receiver, that solves a lot of problems for the Titans. But yet, that's still a hope. And that's where I am on that. It's like, I don't know, maybe Sissons, that is such a hope. And and you look at them, and you say, who's going to score for them? Radulov, Sagan, Ben, Hines, Haskinen, like all those guys, they easily could score for them.
And I think therein lies the story of the game. I mean, that's what we're talking about, because you're talking about who's the guy that's really going to lead your scoring, who knows? I mean, nobody knows. I mean, we don't know. Right now we got a guy that hasn't played with the team all year long leading the scoring, So.
In all fairness, Yossi scored a garbage goal the other day, so he's tied.
Okay.
So the team captain and Grimaldi, are tied, which is...
So you're saying to yourself, okay, if that's the best you can do, and, right now it is.
I just don't... I if you had to put a gun to my head and say who's going to win game five, I think I'd take the Preds, but boy, as soon as they drop... I took the Preds in game four. And as soon as they dropped the puck in game four and I saw how they played, I said, oh, no. I thought, Jared, you should have seen this one coming. This is what Laviolette teams do after they win a couple in a row in the playoffs, is they just don't show up for a game. And that's what they did. Now, the same thing holds true, that when they don't show up for a game, they usually go out there and they beat the team in the next game. When they did not show up in game five against Winnipeg, and really they showed up, Winnipeg just beat the daylights out of them. But when they lost and got their butts kicked in that Winnipeg game in Game 5 last year, they went to Winnipeg and won 4-0 in Game 6 in the most decisive victory that they had the entire series. So can they pull that out of their rear ends in this game? Maybe, because that's what history would tell you about what this team has done. And I feel like when you have 4 years of evidence, I mean, it starts to become, it doesn't become like a lucky butt-kicking followed by a good game. That happens to be who you are.
Well, and the sad part is, you would like to be able, when talking about your team, to say, okay, we're playing a lesser opponent, so they'll win in five. I feel pretty confident. And sure enough, now we're playing a better opponent, so they'll still win, but it'll be seven. But we go game by game. Well, how are they going to do today? Well, how did they play last game? They were really good. Uh-oh, then we're going to be trouble this game. Well, they were really bad. Well, then we're going to kick butt. That is not what you want said about your team.
I think my anger about those type of games stems solely from both Game 7 of the San Jose series, but more importantly, Game 5 of the Cup Final. The two games that for some reason I will never – let go of me. It's like when the Titans lost to Baltimore or when the Preds lost to Winnipeg, it wasn't like, you're crushed because you were the best team in the sport that year and your team lost. But, you have to tip your cap to the other guy a little bit. Tough day. You didn't do things right. But you lost. But to not show up in Game 5 of the Stanley Cup Final, that one is going to stay with me, like the game at Jacksonville where Mariota broke his leg. To not show up when you finally, for the first time in eons, have a shot at the playoffs and you don't show up, or you just tied the series at 2-2 in the Stanley Cup Final and you don't show up and you're on the penalty kill 3 seconds into the game and they score? And so I think I'm always going to hold those kind of games, personally, because they let it happen to them at the single most inopportune time. And again, the stats are, if you're tied 2-2 in a playoff series and the winner of Game 5 has an almost 80% chance to win that series. So you have got to show up in those kind of games. So Floyd apparently is confident in tomorrow.
Yes.
I am not. I am 50-50 on it. You know, if I am, I mean, I'm not confident, but I'm not confident. I'm 50-50. Floyd feels confident in Game 5.
Let's take
your calls, since that's what we love to do. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. 615-737-1025. Again, you've got a little bit over 45 minutes to come on out to K-Bob's and register to win those lower-level tickets for Game number 5 tomorrow. Coming up next, though, what will tomorrow's game tell us about this team? Can this be the game they get it figured out? We'll discuss that next. Jared and the GM, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game on a Fireball Hot Take Friday and streaming on the Game National app.
Do you feel like you guys need some lineup shuffling at this point?
There's always, as you know, there's always lineup shuffling that goes on. You know, every team, and including them and us, and we're looking at that as well. Again, some of it's always based on injury, like it was the first time when a guy like Rocco came in or Salty came in. And then some of it is you're looking for different combinations for maybe a change in the results of the offensive part of the game. So, yeah, we're looking at it.
Peter, are you thinking about changing your lines up? Yes. Why? Because they've stunk. You know, I mean, he's not going
to
say that.
Trying to indirectly explain it, you know.
You don't need to do that, Peter. We understand.
Yeah.
We got it. These were the practice lines today. Forsberg, Arvidsson, Johansson, Granlund, Sissons, Yarncroak, Watson, Bonino, and Smith. So you move Turris down to the fourth line, Smith down to the third line, and then Brian Boyle, who returned to practice, along with Kyle Turris, Mika Salamaki, and Freddie Gaudreau. Although Rocco Grimaldi did not practice, Peter Laviolette said it was a maintenance day, which basically means he's hurt, but he's going to play through the hurt. He's just not going to practice through the hurt. So I would guess that that means that if Boyle comes back tomorrow, then Salamaki goes back to the bench. The question is, if Simmons is able to play, and Simmons practiced today, if Simmons is able to play, do you put both Simmons and Boyle and Grimaldi back in there? And then at that point, you're kind of dumping off on Kyle Turris, which I'm not against. But I just think that, you know, boy, it's time for big decisions to be made in that case. Go from the second line to the bench in the playoffs. That's
that would open a lot of eyes, you know. And, again, I'm sure mainly because of his contract. You know, I mean, let's face it.
I mean, and the commitment you made to him, the trade that you
spent
all the picks to the guys to get him, and then you pay him the money, and then it's like, whoa.
Yep.
Okay, tomorrow, Game 5. Floyd, are we going to learn something about this team tomorrow? Is it a prove-it moment for this team? And I'll liken it to this. If Marcus Mariota were about to play in a game like this at this point in his career, we would say, okay, this is a big game for him for whether or not he can be the franchise quarterback for your team. Here are the Predators playing this big of a game, 80% chance to win the series if they win tomorrow. Along those lines, is it the kind of prove-it game for this team where if they go out there and they play like they should and they win comfortably, not butt-kicking, but win comfortably, win a good game, we can be confident in them in a very tight Stanley Cup playoffs? Or if they go out and get blasted, should we just say, okay, this is it? This is who they are. This is what they are. This is what they're going to be. Or is it maybe a little bit more complicated than just looking at the result of tomorrow's game?
Yeah, I mean, it's probably not for me. I mean, to be honest, if we go out and get smacked, you know, tomorrow, I mean, it's pretty well over for me. I would be shocked if it wasn't over. By the same token, if we go out and win, I mean, I'll be shocked if we don't win the series.
Mm-hmm.
Now, where do we go from there? I mean, I wish I could throw out some kind of optimism for the next series if we get to it, but I can't.
I'm not worried about the next series.
So I'm saying right now, in my mind, if they can win this, then they're going to win the series. If they can't, then it's going to be hard.
I just feel like this team, throughout the season, we've challenged them at certain instances, and it's some of them they've really responded. You know, they got to that last week of the year with a clear goal in sight. With now, again, Buffalo, Vancouver, and Chicago are not
a little
at
bit
the quality
different, yeah.
of Dallas, but they got to those games, and you thought to yourself, if they can win those three games and get around to home ice, that may be kind of proof to us that they've arrived or that they've flipped the switch or whatever. And they did it, and they won the Central, and then it didn't really translate to really mean anything in this Dallas series. I feel like tomorrow's game is the ultimate gut check. You know, do you have it in you tomorrow to rise above whatever happened in game four? You know, whatever Dallas is going to throw at you, and they're going to throw the kitchen sink at you because they've been throwing the kitchen sink at you. But can you rise above that and win the game? Can you get a power play to muster something? Can you get some of these guys that haven't scored goals to score some goals? Can you get the big money guys to play like big money guys? And that's why I think, you know, if you're David Poile, how much does tomorrow's game affect what you do long-term with this team in the offseason? If they come out there and lay an egg, don't you have to reevaluate everything? If they get their buns kicked at home in Game 5 and cannot win at home, a year after they begged you to bring everybody back and you brought everybody back, do you not have to think, boy, I got to shake this thing up. I got to get guys out of here, get guys in here, change some coaches on the coaching side. I mean, I think tomorrow is one of the maybe guys are playing for their jobs kind of game.
I don't know how much he can change up.
I'm talking about in the offseason.
Yeah, but even in the offseason.
Oh, he can change it up. I mean, Chicago changed it all up. They didn't even have a salary cap.
Well, yeah, but I mean, what are you going to do? What are you going to do with Turris?
Oh, you're going to have to give him away.
Well, I mean, you're not going to cut him. You're gonna write him a check for $36 million?
What you're going to do is you're going to trade him. And you're probably going to have to give up an asset that you don't want to give up. And you're probably not going to get a lot in return. Or you're going to give him up to a team that will give you somebody that they don't want in return. So, like, I'll use James Neal as an example. You know, James Neal is going to be scratched tonight in Calgary. They're facing elimination against Colorado. And James Neal, I think, makes $5 million a year or something like that. You know, that's where you call Calgary and you say, okay, we'll give you Turris for Neal, and you bring James Neal back here and you hope that James Neal doesn't stink like he stunk in Calgary.
Oh, yeah, but is that going to solve any problems for you?
I mean, it gets rid of Turris.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it doesn't do you any good to swap spit. I trade a bad player for a bad player. I mean, that's not going to help you at all.
The hope is that the bad player,
you can't,
like
the,
Neal,
my point
is not a bad player when he comes back here.
My point is you can't get rid of a bad player without getting a bad player back. I mean, that's how you're stuck. Because there's nothing else you can do. You can't cut him.
Well, you gave up Colin Wilson for a fourth-round pick, which was essentially like dumping him off.
Well, yeah, Colorado. But I mean, no. I mean, let's face it. Everybody in the league is talking about Tours. Everybody in the league has seen how he's
played. One of the single most disappointing players.
There is absolutely no way that you think you're going to trade him and get anything of value. So, I mean, what good does it do you as a trading a bad player to get a bad player? That doesn't do you any good, and you're still going to owe him $36 million.
I know, but what if you think that James Neal can come in here and be the James Neal that he was here? You know, James Neal didn't work out in Calgary, but this coach knows James Neal, and you know James Neal, and James Neal has played well here, so you flip Turris for James Neal, and you hope that you can get James Neal back to being James Neal. I'm just throwing that out there as something that they could do. Like, another thing they could do is they could trade P.K. Subban. You know, they could trade Matthias Ekholm. They could trade somebody that you would never think that they would trade. What if they trade Ryan Johansson?
But does that help you?
It depends on what you get in return.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, P.K. is one of the few guys that's been playing. I mean, you trade him. I mean, what does that tell your team? You know, you want to – if you're going to blow it up, you want to blow it up and make a statement too. Which is, if you are going to perform like this, then you're not going to be here. Well, you can't say that. It's like saying, well, we're going to trade Pekka. Well, wait a minute now. You know, what does that tell the rest of the team? You be loyal and you play your butt off, you're going to be out of here. I mean, I'm not sure that's all good. I understand what you're saying. You'd like to do it, but my point
is, I would like for them to not have to blow up the roster in the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a lot easier said than done. You know, you start saying, oh, just get rid of this guy, just get rid of that guy. Yeah, great. Who are you going to get rid of him to? Who wants him? And so, you know, and you can't cut him. So what do? You're stuck with him. So, you know, that's why I said you can't trade for these guys and have these guys come in and not perform. That is not an option. You know, you're trading for a guy because he's playing at this level. When he comes here, he has to perform at that level. If you don't, every time you make a move, you're losing ground.
Well, just think of the guys that you've extended that were playing at that level 2 years ago that are not playing at that level right now.
Same logic, same reasoning. Those guys, if I'm going to extend a guy, I can't extend a guy and have him go in the crapper. I got to extend a guy because we expect him to be better at some point in time down the road. We expect him to reach a certain level. If every time you do that, they go down the hopper, I mean, you're out of business.
So that's how important I think Game 5 is if they lose Game 5 and they lose the series, I think all those questions become relevant questions.
Ooh.
And if you win and you move on in this series and maybe you go to the Western Conference Final or you do something, then maybe these don't become these issues. That's how big this game is. Adam Vingan in studio coming up next. He'll join us live here on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. Again, K-Bob's Grill and Ale is where we are right here, located in Hillsborough Village across from Vanderbilt University, 1602 21st Avenue South. It is simply delicious. We have two lower-level tickets for you for Game 5, so come on out and register to win those. And you got a shot at him. It's Jared the GM right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And we are streaming on that app that everybody out there loves to tap. That is the Game Nashville app.
Kind of hard to make judgments about the last game just because it was a little unusual.
I kind of said that. I didn't mean to be quick without him. But, you know, he wanted me to explain the game. And it is what it is. I mean, at one point the shots were 5-3 and it was 3-0. And they had a couple of power play redirect goals. And that was it. You know, you're chasing it down. They threw another power play goal in to make it 4-0 before the period ended. And, you know, after that, it's just back and forth hockey. But you're chasing a lead that, you know, probably 98% of the time you don't dig yourself out of it 4-0. So, well, Gary's continued to play hard. I said at the press conference that night, even though it was a frustrating night for everybody, I thought our guys were ready to play. That game unfolded and it was 2-0 3 minutes in and not going our way. Things that we can fix, though. You know, those, like I said, those, there's things that we can fix with regard to the penalties, with regard to the penalty kill. So we'll work at that. We talk about everything.
What about the things you can fix with the power play? Is that also on the list, or
didn't mention about it?
Did not mention that. Okay. I'll just say this: the St. Louis Blues were down 1-0, 14 seconds in last night. They were down 2-0 very quickly. Did not deter them. They ended up winning the game. We have to get over this thing of, well, you know, we were down 3-0, so we're chasing the game at that point. And the teams do come back and win. Now, not all the time, but they do sometimes give up the first goal and come back and win, which the Predators apparently sometimes, it feels like, just toss it in the laundry bin as soon as they get down. Adam Vingan from The Athletic is in studio. Okay, Adam, as we are live out at K-Bob's Grill and Ale, again, you've got less than 30 minutes to come on out and register to win those two lower-level tickets. Adam, do you believe Game 5 is the end-all, be-all for the Nashville Predators this season?
I know you've been asking that question all day as I've been listening to the show, and it's interesting the responses that you've received and solicited amongst yourselves. You know, I'm of the mind that I do think tomorrow's game is incredibly pivotal. Of course, any Game 5 is, but just when I think of how this series has gone, I'm not sure if the Predators lose tomorrow on home ice that they're coming back. We've seen it before. As we've discussed, this team has shown an ability to bounce back from some rough performances in the course of the playoffs, but the Stars have been the better team in this series, and to think about what would have happened if Pekka wouldn't have made that save on Jamie Benn in Game 3, the Predators would be facing elimination tomorrow. So if the Predators can get it right and continue to do what they've done which is very rarely lose consecutive games in the playoffs, and they win tomorrow, I think I'm confident that they'll be able to get it together enough to close it out in 6 or 7. But if the Stars come out and play as they have been through most of this series and go back to Dallas on Monday for Game 6, I'm not sure the Predators are playing another game at Bridgestone this season.
Why have the Stars been able just to smack around the Predators as much as they have in this series?
That's a good question. Certainly we looked at Dallas when the postseason began, and you know, I'm guilty of it as well. I thought that may have been the path of least resistance when you consider some of the other potential first round opponents, namely Winnipeg or St. Louis. But the Predators, the depth players have risen, I feel like, for the depth players and the star players have risen for the Stars. Well, the Predators can't say the same. Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin, Alex Radulov, Matt Zuccarello, Roope Hintz, Miro Heiskanen, they've come in and they've delivered. Ben Bishop minus Game 3. When you look at the Predators side, with all due respect to Rocco Grimaldi, who has had a fabulous season considering what we expected of him when it began, he should not be your leading goal scorer among forwards 4 games into a playoff series. There are a lot of players that have left me wanting more through 4 games, and I don't think you can say the same about Dallas. I think the players that they've needed to produce have, and the Predators, you can't say the same thing.
Speaking of your leading scorer, we've had discussions about Harvey today, and Jared has kind of decided that he's a regular season player, not a playoff caliber player. What do you think about that?
I mean, that's hard to say. I mean, he had 9 points in 13 playoff games last year. He had 13 points in 22 playoff games the year that they made it to the Stanley Cup final.
But he didn't score any goals.
He had five of his 9 points last year were goals. He had 5 goals in 13 games.
I was just talking about in 2017.
Well, he had three goals in 22 games. But you weren't expecting the same of Victor then than you are now. One thing that I found to be very interesting, I saw this graphic from The Point, which is a statistical website. In the past 2 games, the Stars have ceded only 10 shots from the slot to the Predators in Games 3 and 4. In Games 1 and 2, I think it was 33. So they went from having 33 shots from the slot as a team in Games 1 and 2 to 10 in Games 3 and 4. And that line in particular feasts on those high-quality scoring chances. And the Stars have done an excellent job in the past 2 games, particularly, of preventing those highest-quality scoring chances from anybody. But, I do think that top line has generated some looks, and the underlying numbers are good. But as I said on your show last week, or earlier this week, rather, the underlying numbers really don't mean anything at this point if they're not translating to goals. So I'm not as going to say as far as Victor Arvidsson is not a quote-unquote playoff player, but that entire line, certainly from an actual production standpoint, leaves much to be desired through 4 games.
How much of that stat, the number of shots from the crease that's been so diminished, how much of that could be because of the matchups they were able to generate by being at home and the matchups they can create?
I mean, I certainly think that has some aspect of doing it, but an aspect of part of it. But when I look at the Stars entering the postseason, they were one of the best teams in the league at protecting that area. Games 1 and 2 were more of the exception than the rule for the Stars. In Games 3 and 4, it went back to being more of what we expected from the Stars. So it's, I'm curious. I would have to look at it deeper. I'm sure the matchups may have something to do with it. I'm not sure it has everything to do with it, but it really is just a return to form for the Stars, who used that defensive brand of hockey to rebound from a, slow first half to make it into the playoffs in the first place.
Who's along those lines? I think both Jared and I felt like the matchups that Dallas was able to create in these last 2 games has really mattered in the outcome of these games.
Well, I certainly look at Game 3 Mikhail Granlund ices the puck. It's a 2-1. I think it was 2-0 at that point. It was 2-1. Mikhail Granlund ices the puck. I know it's different because of it's icing, but you have the second line, the tourist line, in a defensive zone situation against Ben Sagan and Radulov, which is a recipe for disaster. And it ended up being a recipe for disaster because Sagan tied the game.
Scored, yeah.
So when...
Well, yeah.
Yes, I know that the icing makes it a little bit different, but, you know, I'm very curious to see how these new potential forward lines play out, like which qualifies as the quote-unquote shutdown line, probably the Bonino line with Watson and Smith, even though, you know, Craig Smith is not typically someone you expect to play a defensive role, so to speak. So, you know, I'd be curious to see how much the matchups play. Peter Laviolette was asked about that before Game 4, and he sort of dismissed it as being a significant part of how things go. But, you know, I will be curious to see how Peter Laviolette deploys his lines, specifically if they look as they did in practice today.
Are you buying Adam Vingan's with us? Are you buying what Laviolette's selling? Because a lot of the things that Laviolette's saying I hear, but I'm not sure I completely believe. For example, he talked about the matchups not being that big of a deal, and yet when the game is in Dallas, it feels like Dallas is getting opportunities when they want. He said they showed up to play on the other night, but in reality, it kind of felt like they didn't. So there's some things that he's saying that I'm not sure I'm completely buying into. When you hear Laviolette say some of these things, are you buying what he's selling?
Oftentimes, I will give Peter the benefit of the doubt just because he is a Stanley Cup winning coach, a coach that's taken three separate teams to the Stanley Cup final. So oftentimes I will skew towards giving him the benefit of the doubt. But, you know, when it comes to the matchups, I mean, maybe, you know, I'm kind of split on how I feel about that. You know, you heard the question I asked him after the game on Wednesday, you know, whether or not he chalks it up as penalties, power play goals, redirects, what have you. A group like this one, this group that's been through so much over the past 4 years, has experienced pretty much everything the playoffs have to offer. To me, personally, it's unacceptable that this team showed up like that. And that's what I was getting at when I asked him that question. But, you know, that one I found a little bit harder to believe. I mean, whether or not whether you can argue about the validity of the penalties, they still put themselves in that position. And it was very hard to watch them play that first 12 minutes. A team as experienced as this one honestly should not have games like that. When you think about the San Jose game 3 years ago, you could kind of get that one. Game 7, lose 5-0. You can kind of dismiss that as a tired young group, you know, finally running out of steam. Stanley Cup final, hard to dismiss that one. Game on Wednesday, hard to dismiss that one too. So I mean, I'm not really, you know, again, as I say, I often give Peter the benefit of the doubt just purely out of respect for what he's accomplished, but it was kind of hard for me to quite grasp what he was trying to sell.
Adam Vingan's with us. We'll get another segment with Adam. We'll also take some phones. 615-737-1025 as we are live at K-Bob's on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. Let me tell you about Fireball Cinema Whiskey. That's right. Big celebrating. If Floyd's right about the outcome of tomorrow's game, you're going to want to make sure you are downtown and celebrating with ice cold Fireball Cinnamon Whiskey. Nothing goes down so smooth and tastes so great. That's ice cold Fireball Cinnamon Whiskey. Ignite the night. Please do it responsibly and be 21 years or older to enjoy Fireball. More with Adam Vingan on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. It's Jared and the GM on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
You were asked Craig Smith about just what they have to do to be more disciplined to stay out of the box. He said, be more disciplined to stay out of the box. Is it that simple?
Yeah, well, I tried to answer this the other night. I do think that there's some penalties. I don't always agree with all of them. You know what I mean? There's some where we just lose our mind for a second, and those ones have to come out of it. The ones where you're angry or you're frustrated or you retaliate, those ones can happen. The ones that bother you maybe even more are the ones where it's almost a lack of execution. You know, nobody means to shoot the puck out of the rink, and it happened twice, so that's two penalties. Nobody means to accidentally high stick somebody when you don't even see them, but yet you got to be in control of your stick. So, like I said the other night, some of it is actual discipline, And then some of it is probably execution. You know, execution not to shoot it out of the rink or execution to be in control of your stick. But regardless, when you add it all up, it's way too much. They pounced on it in the first period, and before some people got to their seats, it was 2-0.
Boy, how do you feel as a coach when you hear somebody say, hey, he wasn't trying to shoot the puck out of the rink? And, I mean, I'm sure you had guys who didn't try to fumble the football, who didn't try to not sack the quarterback, who didn't try to throw interceptions. I'm not sure that doesn't resonate with
you. Well, I mean, nobody on any team or any sport goes out and tries to mess up. That's not the issue. It's not. We know they're not trying to do it, but they're doing it. How do you correct the doing it part?
Adam Vingan from The Athletic is with us. Here's where I'm at K-Bob's Grill and Ale. So, Adam, how much do you buy some of the excuses the Predators have made about things that have not gone their way so far in the series? That being one of them.
Well, when you want to talk about the penalty, since that's what Peter was just addressing in that clip, I'm always of the mind that even if the penalty call is questionable at best, the player still put himself in a position to have a penalty called on him. And I think even then, you have to be wary of everything that's going on around you. So, I mean, certainly there are some penalty calls that are bad. It happens all the time. But you're putting yourself in the position to do that. Again, Philip Forsberg didn't mean to send the puck out of the rink, but maybe you play with a little bit more composure in that situation and you don't loft the puck as high. Or maybe Matthias Ekholm didn't mean to get his stick up on that first penalty, but his stick did come up. You have to be aware of that. So, I don't want to say they're making excuses, but, you have to be cognizant of not just where, what's happening on the ice, but everything else that's happening outside of your periphery, because, penalties are going to get called that you're not going to like. And if you put yourself in the position to have those penalties called, you're not going to like the result.
Adam Vingan is with us. I said we'll go to your phone, so let's just do right that. Jerry is up next here on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. Go ahead, Jerry.
At what point do the players lose focus so much that they can't play like they're supposed to, especially with all the experience and all that they have, to take what they've learned from previously and turn it into victories instead of excuses on why they lost?
Thank you for your call, Jerry. Adam?
I'm not sure how much of it is a significant lack of focus. I know that the game the other night certainly could qualify as that. I'm not going to deny that. But I'm not going to say that this team lacks focus. Certainly this team has accomplished a lot and enough to show that they do have the focus and the wherewithal to win important games at important times of the year. But it just sort of goes back to what we were talking about all season long, this up and down team. And, I remember at the end of the regular season, after they won those two games against Vancouver and Chicago, two goal comebacks in each to win the Central Division, I thought to myself, well, maybe they had quote-unquote it after all, or they found quote-unquote it. Now I'm convinced that those two games were, they were special. I'm still unconvinced this team has it this year, but I don't know if it's a lack of focus, and I'm not concerned that after the game on Wednesday that they're not going to find it or get back, get back on track. I mean, I'm convinced that regardless of the outcome tomorrow, they're going to play a much better game, just because history suggests that after they get their butts handed to them, that you typically respond favorably.
Adam, there's been a lot of, not a lot, but some talk about possible leadership vacancies. In your mind, and I think I mentioned this to, I can't remember who it was, but anyway, I think they responded with, there are good leaders on this team. And I would agree with that. I think there are some good leaders on this team. But is it still possible with losing some of the old-time, bred leaders they had for all those years, that maybe it's a different style, different make, not as good? What do you make of all that? Anything?
I guess I'll start by speaking of Roman Josi, who's the captain of this team. And right. You could find some dark corners of Predators Twitter and Predators Facebook. And trust me, as Jared knows, there are some dark corners of Predators Twitter and Predators Facebook that suggests that Roman Josi isn't a good captain because he's not going to fire these guys up, or he's not gritty enough, or whatever else. I often
just like Mariota
and Floyd, and I think Floyd, you can speak to this better than I can. I think there's a misconception that leadership is equated to anger. Like Roman Josi needs to go in that room and take a hockey stick to a Gatorade cooler and flip a table and yell at his teammates to get them going. I don't think that's real leadership. I don't think yelling equates to being a good leader. Sure, Mike Fisher and Shea Weber were quote unquote grittier than Roman Josi, but they were both. Neither of them were rah-rah types either. They were lead by example, silent, soft-spoken guys. Roman Josi certainly has the unquestioned respect of that dressing room, and he has guys around him that, are more vocal, like Ryan Ellis or Matthias Ekholm. There are players that can provide that. I just feel like sometimes, the leadership aspect of it can be overstated. I mean, this group has been together for a while. They know who the leaders on this team are in various aspects. But speaking about Roman specifically, the idea that he's not a good captain because he's not going to be the guy who gets in someone's face and yells at them and gives the Newt Rockne speech is absolutely absurd. So, I'm not sure I believe the idea that there's a leadership void in that dressing room.
Adam Vingan, who will be on Preds Insiders tonight with Ryan Porth. Adam, always good to see you. Always good to hear from one of our favorite listeners.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Jared. I really appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Thanks, Adam.
Adam Vingan, Fireball Hot Take Friday. Floyd, before we get out of here, who wins tomorrow? What's the score?
Preds win tomorrow. 3-1.
3-1 tomorrow. I'm only going with the Preds, even though my head is telling me Stars. I'm only going with the Preds because I want that McDonald's billboard to be right so bad. Preds in 6. I'm going to take the Preds. I'm going to go 2-1 in overtime. I think it's going to be just like game 2. That's it for us. We are out of here. We are back Monday. Full reaction plus a game 6 preview. That starts at 2, as it'll be a wild week between that and the draft. We'll see you. Jared the GM, Preds Insiders next.